Gosh. Okay, so I'm good now. I've learned everything that I need to learn. We can be done for the day. Was that interesting for you to hear what other people said? Every group of people I talk to, there's always someone who says, we're not saying it's all bad. There's really good things about it, which fascinates me every time that there's this need to advocate for media. And my daughter's always like, social media doesn't need an advocate. It's got a bajillion dollar industry behind it that's gonna make sure that you get good things from it. So this would not be a conversation if it was all negative. And that's a really important thing to understand. Like, no one would be talking about it. If this was all bad, none of us would do it, right? If it only had bad things that came from it. It has a lot of really great things that come from it. And that's the hook, right? That's the thing that we... So what you all presented today were basically the challenges, right? Challenges that you have this understanding, and I'm so thankful and appreciative. Like, the more that you can sort of get on your own page about this and own what media is to you, what it is for you, how it interacts with your personality, with your job, with your role in society. Like, media is this for me. And the more you can say what you need and what you want for your own growth and thriving, like what you all just said today was the very first step of owning and taking responsibility for specifically what you need, right? You don't need parents telling you, hey, stop doing this, you need to do more of this, you know. And you parents don't need, all of you know, you don't need to be so preoccupied with how your kids are using it and what they're doing and miss, hey, what is media for me? And I think the reason Jen's response really hit a place for me is that this can be the greatest area of conflict between families right now. And that is, like, when you talk about, like, how to integrate this in your faith and with your values, like, let's not let it do that. Right? So I have all these ideals and all these ways. So for reference point, my kids are 21 and 23. They're the first iPhone kids. My husband and I were the first iPhone parents. So we had phones before our kids did, which my husband always says we're the ones who looked away first, right? They had these. I would stand in line with my kids for what? Hours sometimes, all the boring things we did before we had phones, and I was with my kids. I was singing them songs, or we were, you know, looking at things around the room. Whatever you had to do to keep your kids occupied, they had 100% of me because I didn't have something to distract me. I got my iPhone, and now all of a sudden, oh, I could be texting somebody, or I could be taking a picture of something, or whatever, and my kids didn't have phones yet, right? So they lost us first, if you want to track back how this happened. Their parents went away. Then, because we're so brilliant, we're like, oh, I have a phone. Now I want my kids to have a phone. And I was a wait until whenever mom. Even back then, my kids were the latest to have them. They were also the first generation that even had that option. So then, hey, not only do I have something to do in line, now you have something to do in line too. I was determined to get my kids on. I was one of the first people, I knew two people on Facebook when I got on Facebook. I knew one person on Instagram when I got on Instagram. My kids were the first kids that, like, I got my kids on social media. I was determined, like, I knew this is going to be how everybody is relating, and I wanted them to learn how to do it in the healthiest way and as young as possible so that they were sort of, could speak this language. At that point in time, compared to now, it was relatively harmless. Like, Instagram didn't have a like button, you didn't have comments, it was really about sharing photography, it was kind of a creative space, it just didn't have a lot of harms. It was kind of an artistic place. Facebook was actually about connecting to people from different aspects of your life that you could be in contact with that I never thought I would see again. So I was, which I'm sure some of you were, I was a part of this, like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. This is so exciting. I can be connected from a very lonely place in my life. I had two little kids at home, felt very isolated, and now it was like I could share all these things that made people be like, oh my gosh, you're the best mom. Oh my gosh, your kids are so cute. I was like, they are. I loved it. I really loved it. And I tell people often my relationship with social media was actually a very positive one. I did not have a lot of trauma from that. I kind of had the reverse. It became such a magical place for me to live that it became so much more interesting and exciting that than my real life, right? My real life was very boring and slow and unrewarding. I didn't get that same feedback from my kids. They didn't think I was so great every time I posted something. I then really did start to use my life in a way that is, if you haven't been a social media user and then not been a social media user, I would have never seen the way that it changed the way that I thought. It changed the way that I engaged in moments. It changed my conversations because I started to use them to serve my brand. And that like makes me want to throw up. But because it feels so foreign now and it feels almost strange to say, but that's what it is. Like everybody's social media is this new responsibility that you have to the brand that is you. That is a huge responsibility. Okay, so what I want y'all to have a grasp of before we move into the breakout sessions is my very, very favorite part of this whole conversation. How many of you are familiar with the concept of flow? Like getting in a flow state? Jen, do you want to describe what a flow state is?
I'll try. It's sort of when you're engaged in something that, usually like a creative pursuit, that's kind of where a lot of people talk about it, right? Where you sort of are so kind of in tune with the work or the thing that other things sort of become less important or sort of dim kind of around you, right? People talk about losing track of time or, right?
Yes. Okay, so did y'all all hear that? So flow is when you enter a state where you kind of lose time, you're completely absorbed in what you're doing. It is your brain's favorite place to be. One of the best examples of being in flow is rock climbing, actually, because it requires all of you to be in this space. I'm sure you can imagine like doing art, like Jen was saying, a lot of it is creative expression. There's this place you get into your brain where you're like, oh my gosh, I could stay here forever, and everything is working right. And you kind of lose a sense of time, but you also lose a sense of yourself. You're just like in the flow. So can you all think of a time that you have felt that way? My favorite example to use is math, because usually half the people in the room aren't math people. But even if you're not a math person, there was some time in your life where you learned an equation and you could put in the answers and you were like, oh, I figured it out, like it was a puzzle. So that moment is actually a state of flow. So you can be in a state of flow even regarding things that you're not particularly good at. The secret is, I'll tell you this now. Okay, the secret is, the definition of flow is when your challenges and your resources are increasing at the same rate. So imagine yourself like, I have this challenge in front of me, I don't know if I can do it, oh my gosh, but it's just this much outside of the resources you have. And so you have to put all of you to gathering these resources to be like, wait, I think I got it. And then you get it. Does that make sense? Like, so that little moment is like, that's a flow state. So, I was talking to a friend. I will not say the punchline first. So I was talking to a friend who was trying to come up with this particular musical word that was like this complicated word, whatever. And he was like, oh, I can't think of what that word is. I'm going to Google it. And I was like, no, you're not. Like, it's in there. And like 3 or 4 times he was reaching for his phone. And I was like, no, you have to, like, it's in your mind. Like, find it. And it was maybe like 2 or 3 minutes later. And he just went, and like said the word. And I was like, that moment is flow. And that moment is like kind of what I call an inside treat. Like where your brain fires off in making these connections that it didn't think that it could make, and then it does. So I'm obsessed with the flow state. So rewind back when I first started, when I lost my phone and I first started studying like how this was impacting me and my mental health, and then quickly had this observation room to see how it was affecting my kids, because my phone had to be out of my life before I could see how my kids' phones were affecting them. I knew, and I watched, as I said in the talk that I think y'all saw last night, I was watching this cause trauma in my kids' life and in my own life, and these tiny little, what we call little T traumas, right? So while there are some of those big events that, you know, we talked about, and one of the definitions of media trauma is you actually see something horribly traumatic and it has specific impacts to it. But there's also the little T traumas, which is what most of us are dealing with all the time. It's just that exhausting, like, you're not gonna ever be enough, you're not gonna ever have enough, there's so much to do, and it just wears on you. So I was watching my kids, myself, my family, my community start having these symptoms of PTSD with no trauma. So I knew the way that my brain works is like, okay, everything I've learned, everything we know in the therapeutic community about healing trauma, we have to somehow get that to the average person. So I went on this like path of what heals trauma, what heals trauma, what heals trauma. All these different types of therapy heal trauma, blah, blah, blah. But there is this man named Mikhail Csikszentmihalyi, who's actually the one who discovered flow. So he is the father of flow. He was a 10-year-old boy after World War II. When we started having shell-shocked soldiers, right? That was the first way anyone was ever able to define trauma. It was like, oh, that's what happens to soldiers when they're at war and they come home. He was fascinated by, like, all these soldiers came home and their people would go, oh, they were in the war. And everyone understood, right? Oh, something bad happened to them. That's why they're acting that way or whatever. As a 10-year-old, he was like, yeah, but not all the soldiers are acting that way. He became fascinated with the soldiers who weren't shell-shocked, and as a 10-year-old decided to study that. So this is like only Freud and Jung were like the only people out there talking about anything psychological. He dove into that and he started following soldiers who were not shell-shocked and studying their lives to see what's different about them. And what he found is that all of them had regular activities in their lives where they got into the flow state. And that flow state is actually what heals your brain. So it both promotes a brain that can recover more easily from trauma, but it also heals trauma. So one of my mottos is hobbies save lives. So if you have a hobby that can get you into flow state, you have, one, something that's actually going to help heal your brain from the trauma that's caused. Two, something better in your life than the thing that's causing the trauma, right? Those flow state actually deliver to your body, your brain, your relationships, the things that you're looking for when you go on social media, right? The promises and the magic that media is offering and can't ever fully deliver, the flow state actually gives back to you. So a huge thing when it comes to media is you can never think about what you're giving up. Like, it's not just like, oh, I need to get rid of this. I need to spend less time on this. Oh, this is too much for me. You have to find something better to replace it. You have to find something you want to wake up in the morning and you want to do more than that. And that's what you have to feed. Okay, so this is where I should have a slide, but I don't have a slide. So I want you to picture, how many of you have a piece of paper? Let's see if we can draw my favorite chart in the whole world. Okay, so it's your classic like X and Y axis, right? So on the bottom is resources. So that's your X axis. Up the top is challenges. Your flow state is when your resources are increasing at the same rate as your challenges. So can you see that? Can you picture that in your mind? I almost have everything I need to do this really hard thing. I do have what I need to do this really hard thing, right? So what happens in this state, first of all, let's see, am I gonna tell you that yet? No, not yet. We're gonna do the other side. Okay, so now, positive resources. Now do negative resources. When you don't have enough resources for your challenges, okay? We're gonna go up this little scale. So for whatever reason, the story that always comes to my mind for this is being at the grocery store, having gotten all my groceries, having both of my little kids there, like accomplished this major, like you should get an Olympic medal for the end of this shopping trip, getting up to the register and not having my wallet, left my wallet at home. So that feeling, or say you get to class, you're about to take a test, you find out you have a test that you didn't know that you had. What's the first feeling you have when you are in a situation where you do not have the resources for your challenge? It's the first thing that happens. Anxiety. Okay, I'm gonna say even before anxiety, despair, stress, right? Your body is going to have a stress response. Like it's gonna kick up that cortisol, that adrenaline in your body. It's like, if, then let's say I dig around and I'm like, oh, there's my wallet. It's at the bottom of my purse. Then what happens? You what?
Elation,
right? Okay, so then it's like that didn't become anxiety, right? It like resolves itself on some level, like, but what happens when that stress doesn't go away, right? What happens when I don't just not have that wallet? I'm really not sure I have enough money in my bank account. Then we get more into that space of anxiety, right? That stress. So first stress, I don't know. Okay, well then if that sustains itself for too long, that translates to anxiety. And this is what we've been talking about just as a culture, this sort of undercurrent of like, why do I just feel anxious all the time, right? About everything, it's just there. If that anxiety continues and it doesn't, you don't get the resources to meet that need, what's that anxiety gonna turn into? Check in with yourself, like you know this, you know these answers. These are your answers.
For me, it's anger.
Oh, that's so good. Okay.
Pain, illness.
Wow. Yes, so we're skipping over one. If I've been anxious for so long, I keep not having the resources. Fear, anger,
depression.
So really depression and hopelessness. The depression comes a little bit, almost apathy, and hopelessness come after depression. Depression still is even like, oh, then when I'm depressed for so long, then I stop caring, right? Depression still has a little care in it. Apathy is like, what's the point, right? You keep not having the resources and keep not having the resources. You're never good enough. You don't ever have enough money. You never blah, 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 blah. The ultimate play out of that in today's terms, the ways that we talk about it, that's what equals trauma, right? So you could have a trauma in a very like, wow, I was in a car accident. It was a very traumatic event, physically, emotionally, maybe even financially. That's one situation that like that, you didn't have enough resources for the challenge. Does that make sense? So like that, it was a trauma. We don't have to go through like all the phases of like, oh, that was stressful and now I'm despaired, whatever. That's just immediately this situation caused a trauma that you didn't have, and the definition of trauma is you did not and could not ever have enough resources for that challenge. Does that make sense? So it can happen in a moment, but that's not usually what's happening for most of us. What's happening for most of us is these tiny little moments, like moment after moment after moment, where we don't have enough resources for the challenge that we're facing right at this time. Does that make sense? Okay, now let's go the other direction on my flowchart. So this is so fascinating to me, and it's something I really, really hope that you can leave today integrating. The first moment of when your challenges and your resources are increasing at the same rate, what do you think your first small response to that is?
Excitement.
Close. It's before excitement.
Happiness.
Way before happiness. Because you don't know that you have enough before that. It's still stress. Your body is still going to be like, it's still going to pump that adrenaline into your system. It's still going to pump that cortisol in your system because you have something to do, right? Your body needs it to accomplish this thing. So this is probably what I feel the most passionate about communicating to students, is that it feels the same way at the beginning. So it's that whole idea that not all stress is bad stress. It's quite possible that you have this stress because you are just about to find out, like, oh, this is what it means to like really live. This is what it means to grow. This is what it means to be functioning right outside of my capacity, because the only way we grow is to function right outside our capacity. And it is stressful. It is vulnerable. Okay, so you've got to know that, to take this other path. So you all know this path of not having enough resources, right? Does everyone know this path? Like, you have this experience in your life, various situations. I hope you also know this path, but I want you to know that you don't get to pick to not have stress, right? We'll get on. I'm going faster in my mind because I had a lot of coffee this morning, and I didn't tell Jen that I actually don't drink caffeine, because I was like, you know, maybe they need me to be on caffeine today. Maybe they need to get like Jenny squared. So you experience stress, and that stress, like, you're also going to experience vulnerability. That is not something we're used to when we get to hide behind our phones. And nobody likes vulnerability. Nobody does. It's vulnerable. Okay, so I feel stress. I feel vulnerable. What I want you to see is like, oh, the way to flow isn't all easy and positive and like good. Like, oh, of course I want that one. You are gonna have to work through some of the same things you have to work through on this side. You're just going somewhere. Does that make sense? You're just going to a different place. Okay, so I feel stress. I feel vulnerable. So put yourself in a situation. The last time you felt really accomplished, or the last time you did something really hard. What happened after that first stress response? Can I do this? Am I going to be a failure at this? I'm going to try anyway. Oh my gosh, I feel vulnerable. Then what happens? What's next on that path? You take a risk, and before you build confidence, what happens that makes you feel confident?
You recognize you can do it, that there's possibility to do it.
Oh, it's my favorite word, possibility. Recognition, possibility, a sense of accomplishment, right? And that, I want y'all to think for a second about something that makes you feel accomplished that's actually a super, super small thing that made you feel really proud of yourself. Can you think of like my daughter has this hilarious list of things that only she can do. And like one of them has to do with the certain way she chews gum. And she's like worked on this skill, and she's like, yeah. And like it makes her proud of herself. So these accomplishments and this process of building self-esteem is literally built. You don't get it by people telling you that you're great. It doesn't work. You don't get it by going viral. You don't get it by making millions of dollars. The only way self-confidence is built, self-esteem is built, is by building it inside of yourself this way, by one little accomplishment at a time. Like, I did that. I did that. So can y'all think of a small accomplishment that maybe nobody else but you would think was amazing, but you're like, ah. You can lick your elbow. She can do it. She can do it. She can do it. Can you please stand up? Come on, stand up. Come on, we're up here. This is like a moment. Okay, show everybody. Okay. Who else? Raise your hand if you have a small accomplishment. Come on. You do. Come on.
Making my bed every morning.
Making your bed every morning. Yeah.
I mean, if the dishes are done at the end of the day, we feel pretty good about it.
If the dishes are done at the end of the day. These are inside treats, people. What else? Finding lost things. That's like a deeply satisfying, your challenge is right outside of your resources, and then you find it. It's like, right? Yeah. Okay, so the sense of accomplishment. Being in that flow state is its own reward. You do not have to be good at anything that you're doing. Playing an instrument, playing chess, practicing a new language, it could be a word a day. Like, this is not about being great at anything. That is one of the biggest lies that the world tells you, is that you're only going to be someone of significance or feel proud of yourself if you're good at something. That's not true. You will only feel good about yourself if you're doing things that make you feel good about yourself. It's actually the process, not the end result, right? That's what heals our brains. That's amazing. That's so amazing. So yeah, that's the flow state. So do you all have examples of things that you do, that you can do? We'll talk about this in our breakout session, so I just want you to think about it now. What kinds of activities have you done or would you like to do that puts you in the flow state? You want to get to the point where your relationship with the media is serving your experiences in real life, right? You want to wake up in the morning and you want to love your life. You want to get out of bed. You want to be excited about what you're going to do that day. That's the only antidote, and it's a powerful antidote to the pulls and the myths and the magic of media, right? You have to have something better going on in your real life. Let's see. Well, how much more time do we have?
No.
Does anybody know what time it is?
It's 10.
It's that therapist in me. Everything's an hour, like, just somehow know it. Okay. Let's see. I feel like, do y'all have any questions about that so far? Do you get it? Does it make sense to you? So what I would like to explore in our breakout sessions, so Jim's going to have parents, I'm going to have students. What we're going to explore and what y'all can think about in our little time between is we're really going to unpack what are the specific challenges you have in virtual spaces. This is kind of, it could be social media. It could be just the technology itself. It could be mass media, right? So what are the challenges that we're facing regarding media and digital spaces, technology? And then we're contrasting it Let me tell you now, I already know there are lots of resources in that, okay? Like, but we're not going to talk about that today. Does that make sense? There are lots of good, great, helpful things that we can get from media, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about the challenges that we're facing. And some of those challenges could be the good things about them, right? And then we're going to talk about the resources that we have in the real world. Like, what are real life resources that are going to heal and hold and help us face those challenges? So what I have found over and over and over and over again is that the only thing that helps people be healthy in virtual spaces is what they get in the real world. Because if all of your resources are resources you're finding in virtual spaces, it starts to create its own harms in there. But if you can keep yourself anchored in this real world and feed yourself with the resources, this all of a sudden becomes like, oh, I can manage this. But you can't manage it if it's all in that world. Does that make sense? So that's kind of what we're going to explore in our breakout. And then we'll have lunch. And then after lunch, we'll all come back together. And the hope really is that we can share with each other sort of what we've learned and explored and how we want to do things differently individually, in our families, and then collectively as a community, what you'd like to see and how you would like to experience your community in the healthiest way using all of these platforms. So any thoughts or questions before we move on to the next thing? I love that question so much that if that's the only thing we talk about in our breakout sessions, I would be thrilled. Did y'all hear that? You've got it. I've got it. We'll lead that conversation. That's incredible. Okay. What do you mean by that?
Well, because when I think media, I think technological media, like devices and airwaves and that kind of stuff. But there's also like media like in the physical art sense, you know, or music, or, you know, it's not.
Yeah, we won't have a chance to get into it today, but what we're talking about more is the manipulated media. Like, obviously what she's saying is that media is how we showcase and present our creative endeavors, right? It becomes art, it becomes music, it becomes a movie, a television show, a news article, like whatever. So we have these, you know, pure forms of a human representing, whether you agree with it or disagree with it, whether it offends you or it doesn't offend you, it's a pure expression of what something or a group of people wanted to put out there. What we're talking more about today is sort of all of these different platforms and technology that communication is moving through that isn't allowing us a direct experience of that other person or what that other person has to share. Does that make sense?
I think it's fair to say if you get really good at the music industry, you start to see there's manipulation.
Of course, absolutely. Absolutely.
There is that dark.
Absolutely. Correct.
So I think the discernment and the wisdom is required for all.
Correct. Yeah, and that's a whole other conversation, and it's an amazing conversation. Are you talking so? It's almost a, okay, so texting is probably one of the purest things that we could talk about, right? I'm texting my friend Jen. Jen and I have known each other for 100 years. And we have an understanding of each other and our personalities pretty well. And it's just me texting what I'm trying to text to send to her, right? She's texting back. What are the chances of us having a misunderstanding on text?
Are you using emojis?
Right. So that's a pretty pure form of communication. No one is technically manipulating what I'm saying to her. No one's making ad money off of that exchange. And yet the chances of it being distorted or confusing or us not getting it are super high, right? And yet that's the primary way people are communicating. Almost every single time I see a client and they say, and he said, and she said, and then we did, I have to say, were you on the phone? Were you talking to each other? Were you texting? At this point in time, it's about a 90% chance they were texting. So that's what I mean by, like, if Jen and I were talking on the phone, what are our chances of miscommunication? Significantly decreased, right? So no one is consciously manipulating my communication with Jen, but the technology is interrupting our communication. So that's a really, there's nothing malicious about that one. That's just the facts. Does that make sense? Then we get into like the manipulations of, gosh, which one do we even want to talk about? Yeah, basically the algorithms that are feeding and manipulating and making you see more of what you want to see and just enough of what you don't want to see to get you angry, to keep you on the platform because that's how they make all the money. Like that's the dark side of, that's a conscious manipulation of the human vulnerabilities to keep you on this. One of the worst things is the whole streak concept. So that it taps into all of the things that it manipulates, the flow state is what it does. And so streaks, like that means like, oh, every day if I don't tag or comment or whatever this person, like you get credit and it builds up. And if you miss a day, like you lose, you go back to zero. Yeah. And that's a really common thing for kids, like to give, like if they know they can't for some reason, to give their phone to somebody else to not lose their streaks. So it feeds something that is primal. It's primal. It's manipulating something that all of us would do. And for the sake of the platform making more money. That's it. So that's more of the consciously manipulative versus this is just the reality that we have a media that's interacting between us that's keeping me from seeing, hearing, or experiencing what the person I'm communicating with is actually saying, doing, thinking, feeling, whatever. Did that answer your question? I work really, really hard talking about this all the time. We could spend years, it could be a class, talking about how incredibly destructive the platforms and the algorithms are. Like it is dark, it is terrible. I spend as little time there as possible because what I have found is what helps people is seeing what more life could give them. So just talking on and on and on about how awful this is doesn't seem to be doing any good for anybody. There is plenty of information out there, and it just makes me sick and sad. So I want to study something that makes me happy and inspired. But it's important to know, and I can't remember who said it, but it was like, it's toxic or dangerous. No, it's powerful. It's powerful. And to have a healthy respect for it. Who said that? So that's the truth. It's nothing to play with. It's, you know, there's been like metaphors of would you put a 2-year-old in a car and have them drive it, right? Nobody would do that. We wait till you're 16 and then you have lessons or whatever. But yet that is how we all engage in the internet in these mediums are like, oh, we have to know how powerful it is. And in understanding its power, if we can integrate ourselves in real life, in real relationships, in real self-esteem, in real flow state, we have an opportunity to show up in these powerful platforms, and we get to stay in charge. We get to drive the car. We get to say, this is how I want it to be and what I want to do. And we get to show up. That my dream is that we get to show up and create a digital world that is fueled by that. Where right now, so much of our art and music and media, like Netflix now has an algorithm, like they'll make a movie and they can watch when people get distracted, what characters they didn't like, when they look away, when they pause, when they fast forward through it, and then they use that to create the next episodes on. So we're actually getting media that is self-creating itself instead of humans that are having some sort of something that they want to share. So it is feeding, it's becoming itself, basically. I've been thinking about that so much recently. Okay, any other questions before we break out?